Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
Hello and welcome to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Jim, good news, bad news, crazy news as always. It's a bit of a rebuilding month, really, for the good martini ever since November 6th. But today's news is good news. It's not completely shocking, but it is good. And that's that, according to polls from CNN and other sources, by well over a 2-to-1 margin, Americans are supportive of Israel's decision to defend itself against the incessant rocket fire coming from Gaza towards southern Israel, and now more recently towards Tel Aviv. Obviously, the military response has heightened in recent days ever since Israel took out the militant leader of Hamas, and now Egypt's rattling its saber, Turkey's rattling its saber, the Obama administration now sending Hillary Clinton to try and avert a land campaign by the Israeli military. But as all of this has played out, at least over the first few days here, Americans solidly behind the Israelis, even if the mainstream news media doesn't seem to be.
Yeah, and just a little bit of late-breaking news. As you are giving that description, just coming over the wires and being reported on Twitter, Hamas has told Reuters that a Gaza truce will be declared at 5 p.m. Eastern. That is about just a few hours from now. Perhaps it looks like hostilities have come to an end. I think, you know, the poll number you were citing there, not terribly surprising in that traditionally when the Israelis and the Palestinians get into fights, and this happens at least quadrennially, if not more often, almost like a rocket launching Olympics that comes along every couple of years. We see this generally numbers in line with this. And it's kind of good that, you know, that even the administration has kind of been distancing itself a bit from the Israeli government. I know that Obama did give this, you know, rather generic statement that Israel has a right to defend itself. It's good to see that the public does not really see any, you know, anything warm and fuzzy or cuddly about Hamas, and realizes that, you know, when the IDF strikes, usually they're trying to strike Hamas leaders and such, and you know, trying to work their way around human shields, which is difficult to do. Gaza is one of the most densely populated places in the whole wide world, so you know, bombs and rubble and shrapnel certainly can, unfortunately, you know, end up with civilian casualties. But when Hamas launches their rockets, they're aiming at civilians. You know, I mean, they have no, you know, targeting capacity with that. They're just trying to head it, you know, throw stuff into a city and hope they hit IDF, hit civilians, all the same to them. So I think it's a key moral difference between the two sides that does not escape Americans. And so when they see this conflict, they don't see this, you know, oh, how can the U.S., you know, play some role to mitigate differences between two equally, you know, justified sides. I think, you know, most people look, Israel's purpose in life is to continue to exist, to protect its people, and to not get wiped off the face of the earth. And the purpose of Hamas and Hezbollah and a lot of groups out there is to go out and kill people and to wipe the Jews off the map and wipe Israel off the map, drive them to the sea, yada, yada, yada. It's in all their rhetoric. Every one of their land for peace is land for temporary peace type deals, because they just want to re-strengthen until they can go out and fulfill their nihilist, genocidal desires. And that's, you know, why the U.S. would ever contemplate trying to be, you know, a neutral arbiter between these two parties is mind-boggling to me. But the mark of seriousness in foreign policy discussions is if you furrow your brow enough and believe that if the U.S. just tries hard enough, we can mitigate a peace deal between, you know, one side that is absolutely committed to the annihilation of the other.
On to martini number two now, and one of the new polls that people seem to be fascinated by today, Jim, is that more people are following the fiscal cliff debate than the David Petraeus affair, which I guess is a good thing for the future of this country. A lot of different people involved with these negotiations, one of whom, of course, is the Treasury Secretary, Tim Geithner, who brought his extraordinarily pleasant disposition to the Al Hunt program on Bloomberg Television. And they discussed a lot of different things about extending current tax rates, raising taxes, obviously, on the rich, sequestration, all sorts of other things. And then Al Hunt brought up an interesting topic that Tim Geithner seemed only too excited to agree with.
You agree with Alan Greenspan we ought to just eliminate the debt ceiling?
Oh, absolutely.
You do? Will you propose that?
Well, you know, this is only something only Congress can solve. Congress put it on itself. We've had 100 years of experience with it. And I think only once last summer did people decide to use it to threaten default on the American credit for the first time in history as a tool for political advantage. And that's not a tenable strategy.
Is now the time to eliminate it?
Oh, it would have been time a long time ago to eliminate it. Sooner the better.
So apparently, despite Tim Geithner's extraordinarily revisionist history of what happened last summer, Jim, it's so annoying to have these things in place where politicians actually have to go on the record to accrue more debt.
We have a debt ceiling? I mean, you'd assume if that was the case, at some point it would stop going up. If you constantly raise the debt ceiling, well, it's not really much of a ceiling now, is it? You know, it's obviously a very elastic debt ceiling. You know, I suppose this is a very good, quick summary of the liberal mindset that, you know, in the end, the debt is not really a problem. At no point is it really something that you can reach a point where you drawing a line in the sand, you know, to quote Picard, this far and no further, the line must be drawn here. We don't really believe in that in this country. I'd say to say beyond the liberal base, but I think certainly liberals believe this, that the debt is not really a problem. The idea of the debt ceiling, which I think conservatives really did see was going to be a major point of leverage. I'm not so sure that you look at the debt ceiling fight of last year, whether it really shook out that way. But the argument would be, look, you know, if we can't win in brinksmanship and these sorts of things, well, why do we have it? And in a way, if you know, we put this test to the American people time and again. Do you want the government to limit its spending? And the people are very mixed on that, that they love it in the abstract. But once you get into specifics, it gets into, oh, don't touch my stuff. And so I think Geithner, you know, the Geithner comment is bad. The idea that this is taken very seriously is bad, that the people really believe the government should not only never have no limit on its debt, that at no point should it ever have to contemplate putting a limit on its debt. And that's just, you know, unnerving and creepy and disturbing, but it's where things are headed. And so this is a rebuilding month for good martinis. This is a spectacularly bitter bad martini, Greg.
Yeah, this is just a lesson not learned in any way, shape, or form. And unfortunately, the people that have not learned the lesson have just been given another 4 years. So it doesn't look like we'll have four more years of Geithner, but we're going to have four more years of the policy, which is just as bad. On to martini number three now, Jim. And one of the things that conservatives and other Republicans were very wistful about in the wake of the loss in the presidential race this year was that despite this supposed groundswell of support for getting rid of Obama, if not supporting Mitt Romney's bid for president, John McCain's vote total, both electorally and popular vote, were seen to be the floor. That's where you start from and you build from there. And it looked like for the longest time that Mitt Romney was not even going to meet John McCain's popular vote total from 2008. Well, funny thing happens when you start counting absentee ballots and provisional votes and the random lost ballot box. He has now squeaked across the John McCain popular vote line, which still doesn't mean anything because he's still not going to be president. But at least he has exceeded the floor. The problem is he just wasn't able to get those critical few hundred thousand votes in the right places to put him over the top.
Yeah, at this point, he is now 31,000 votes above of McCain 2008. And one of the things that kind of makes us say crazy martini is this was the early word we were getting as we looked at the results on election night. And I guess the lesson is don't look at election night results or Wednesday morning results and compare them to the preceding 4 years, because there are a whole bunch of states that take a long time to count their absentees, count their late ballots, resolve the provisional ballots, et cetera, et cetera. We were patting ourselves on the back that Obama had been significantly behind his 2008 totals, and he still is. He was at 69.4 million votes. He just cleared 64 million votes. So we're looking about, you know, 5.5 million less than he did 4 years ago. There were not 3 million missing Republicans. There was not this astonishingly low Republican turnout and all that. I remember somebody saying, I think it was like the Wednesday or Thursday after the election day, if you waited on three hours online at Chick-fil-A for a chicken sandwich, but you didn't get online to vote for Mitt Romney, I want to punch you in the nose. and now I think I look at these numbers, and first of all, the one response was, if you wait online at Chick-fil-A for 3 hours, at least you get a chicken sandwich. wait online to vote for Mitt Romney, maybe you get something, maybe you don't. And at the very least, Romney should have offered chicken sandwiches. No. A bit more seriously, though, that the Republican base did turn out, it appears. And the problem is the Republican base isn't big enough. It is pretty darn frustrating to see, you know, in a bunch of these cases, you know, Obama was below his 2008 total nationally by about 2 points, a little less than 2 points in all the swing states. And he put outside the swing states, he was about 2 points. So there's not an enormous difference. He's looking at, you know, about 51.6% of the vote. Down from 53.6. You know, it's good to chip it down at that, but obviously not enough. And I think over time, we're going to look at this, and all the argument of, oh, the unmotivated. I have a tough time believing you look at these results and conclude that there were a large mass of conservatives of any stripe who stayed home. I'm not convinced of that. I wrote yesterday a little bit about the Libertarian vote. Basically, it's like about the neighborhood of 700,000 more people voted for Libertarians this cycle than they did 4 years ago. Some might say it's because Gary Johnson's a better candidate than Bob Barr was. I think you can say that libertarianism is coming more in style. I think it'd be tough for Republicans to win over more of these folks, Greg, because as much as, you know, I have my occasional libertarian sympathies and moods, nobody really thought Gary Johnson's going to win this thing. You know, it's not like there was going to be a sudden surge of 34, 35 points nationally and he was going to squeak through a three-way race. You know, if you voted libertarian in this one, my guess is you're pretty darn libertarian. And, if, you know, the GOP would have to move a lot to win you over. And so I think this is just kind of frustrating for Republicans. About 1% of the population is interested in limited government, but not interested in voting for the Republicans, deeming them not limited government enough when, you know, obviously the other side is painting Republicans as mean and nasty and cruel and cutting government to the bone and being too interested in limited government. So a complication there. But one myth of Election Day can be put to rest. The Republicans did show up, the base did show up, and Romney did at least clear the McCain threshold of 2008.
Jim, I'm just fascinated and completely impressed by the fact that you remember that Bob Barr was the 2008 Libertarian presidential nominee.
I had to look it up last night. It
was, I would have been here all day if you had asked me who it was. But
some future edition of Trivial Pursuit that's going to stump a lot of people. So.
There you go. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please be sure to join us on Wednesday for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.